This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Recently, he went to the World Economic Forum at Davos and came back with a veritable suitcase of investment offers.
That's VOA South African correspondent Anita Powell talking about South Africa's new president, Cyril Ramaphosa. Details next also. Ethiopian Prime Minister Hailemariam Desalegn submitted his resignation today amid political turmoil in Africa's fastest growing economy. And Zimbabweans are reacting to the loss of Morgan Tsvangirai, the leader of the main opposition party, who has died after a long battle with colon cancer. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Well, our top story this hour, Cyril Ramaphosa has been elected South Africa's new president, replacing Jacob Zuma. Ramaphosa's swearing-in ceremony caps days of political tension in the country as the leader of the ruling African National Congress worked to push Zuma out. The longtime party stalwart's popularity has shrunk under the weight of a growing number of scandals. Zuma resigned late last night. VOA correspondent Anita Powell in Johannesburg spoke with my colleague Kate Pound-Dawson today to bring us up to speed on South Africa's political changes.
Well, I think the reaction has largely been positive. I think a lot of ordinary South Africans, especially the ones we spoke to today, the VOA spoke to today, were a little bit tired of maybe just the drama surrounding Jacob Zuma. And so this is the opportunity for a fresh start. But also, Cyril Ramaphosa has a pretty decent reputation, even though he is not maybe the best known character. But I think a lot of South Africans are hopeful right now.
Just who is Cyril Ramaphosa?
Cyril Ramaphosa is an interesting but slightly, I don't want to use the word secretive, but slightly enigmatic man. Not much is really known about his personal life. He's a bit private. Here's what we do know. He is a lawyer. He was a union organizer in the 80s. He was head of the National Union of Mine Workers. So he has a strong union past. Instead of going into politics right after the beginning of democracy in 1994, he went into business and started started a big company and became one of South Africa's richest men. And he is known as a businessman. He's known as a deal maker. He's known as a union organizer, and he, for the last 4 years, has also been deputy president under Zuma.
How might he change things in the government? Is there an expectation he's going to focus more on the business community or on labor or other issues?
Cyril Ramaphosa has already illustrated his acumen with the business community. Recently, he went to the World Economic Forum at Davos and came back with a veritable suitcase of investment offers for South Africa. So he clearly has business acumen. He clearly has great links in the business community, and he clearly speaks well to that community. And that has in turn, whether those deals pan out or not, that has in turn bolstered the South African economy in increased confidence. So right there, you have the number one thing that matters to ordinary South Africans. The economy is more stable. People are hoping that that will translate into higher employment figures and so on and so forth, but it's a little early to tell. He's also taken a pretty hard line on corruption. And I think a lot of South Africans see his treatment of Jacob Zuma, which was pretty uncompromising, as the biggest sign yet of that. But we do wait to see in terms of who he chooses for his cabinet and who he chooses for his inner circle. Because there are a lot of figures in the ANC who have a lot of allegations trailing them, and we're very close to Jacob Zuma.
Now, what happens next to Mr. Zuma?
Jacob Zuma was not at the parliamentary gathering today, nor was he at the swearing-in of Cyril Ramaphosa. He is being anxiously, eagerly awaited by the people of his rural community in KwaZulu-Natal. He's from a village called Kwa Kamalala. And they say that he's benefited their community with development and brought them electricity and running water. And so he will be very welcome there if he makes it there. But he's facing a few problems today, family problems. His son is being sought by police in connection to the Gupta family arrests. This is the Indian family that's being sought for widespread allegations of corruption and fraud. And Udazana Zuma, Jacob Zuma's son, was involved with the Gupta family and one of their business interests. So he probably has quite a bit on his mind today.
That was VOA's Aditha Powell in Johannesburg. She was speaking with reporter Kate Pound-Dawson. South Africa's markets have rallied in reaction to Jacob Zuma's resignation. Kaya Sitole is an economist and political analyst in Johannesburg. Reporter Nadia Same asked him for an update.
Jacob Zuma's presidency has coincided with some very weak economic indicators and some very weak economic fundamentals. So there is this assumption out there that once he's removed from power and is replaced by someone who is better versed in how business ought to operate and how business ought to interact with the state, then of course you're going to see this change in the economic trajectory of the country. And this naturally makes the country a much better investment destination. And of course, then you'll see the currency also sharing that sentiment where people are now believing that the rand is actually worth investing in. So of course, then the competition to sort of invest in South Africa means that the value of the currency is seen to be better than it was before. So this is really just a reaction to the hope that the new administration will be much better at managing economic relations and economic fundamentals.
Now, under Zuma's leadership, South Africa has experienced a string of ratings downgrades. There's also been declining growth. There have been the scandals, Nkandla, the state capture claims, etc. Is it fair to say that this resignation is a relief for traders?
I think it is a relief for the country at large, because even for people who really were staunch Jacob Zuma supporters could never really at this stage distance him from all the shenanigans that he was associated with, and the evidence just became too explicit. So I think what people that are out there, even in the currency market, are now thinking of is that at least now we can have some clear policy direction on where the country is headed. So when we are then engaging with foreign investors, trying to attract foreign investment, we can be able to tell a story that we believe will actually materialize in the long run. While under the Zuma government, you had this policy paralysis where things that were cast in paper just could never be translated into tangible outcomes.
That was economist Kaya Sitole. He was speaking to reporter Nadia Same in Johannesburg. Ethiopian Prime Minister Hailemariam Desalegn submitted his resignation today amid political turmoil in Africa's fastest-growing economy. The academic-turned-politician has led the East African nation since 2012 after the death of former Prime Minister Meles Zenawi. Ethiopia has been rocked by months of protests demanding wider freedoms that have left hundreds dead and tens of thousands detained. The ruling Ethiopia People's Revolutionary Democratic Front, of which Desalegn was once a chairman, has faced internal divisions with the parties representing the other ethnic regions, particularly the Oromo and the Amara, jockeying for position. AP reports that in recent weeks, the government released more than 6,500 detained opposition figures, journalists, and others. This after the prime minister said in January that he wanted to widen the democratic space for all. The protests have disrupted life and business in one of Africa's fastest growing economies. The late Movement for Democratic Change leader Morgan Tsvangirai is being described by many as an icon for democracy in Zimbabwe. Condolences have poured in from South African civil society organizations, representatives of political parties, churches, and Zimbabweans from all walks of life in South Africa. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
The news of the death of Movement for Democratic Change MDCT leader Morgan Tsvangirai has left many hearts sad and broken. Tsvangirai died yesterday at the Johannesburg Hospital after a long battle against colon cancer. At the Randburg, Johannesburg home of one of Tsvangirai's sons, where the family has gathered, the atmosphere was one of sorrow and loss of hope. Tsvangirai's young brother, Collins Tsvangirai, told VOA that his brother not only fought his hardest for democracy, but he also fought hard against the colon cancer that finally took his life. He says, "We are sad as the Zimbabwean family. We are sad as the MDC family." Collins Tsvangirai says when his brother had his first operation, he came here and saw him, but he was in pain. It was a long illness. Zimbabwean human rights defender Teoma Vinga, who also visited the family in Randburg, said Tsvangirai will be remembered for his determination not to compromise on human rights. Austin Moyo, the MDCT shadow ambassador in South Africa, wants Zimbabweans to finish the struggle for democracy that Tsvangirai started. And Solomon Chikwero, who worked closely with Tsvangirai from the time the MDC was formed in 1999, says he is what he is because of him.
The late president was what I can call all in one. He was a visionary, he was a manager, he was a supervisor, he was a mentor. I can say he was everything that I have achieved today.
A memorial service will be held on Friday in Johannesburg to give Zimbabweans in South Africa to say goodbye. Thuso Khumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Zimbabweans are reacting to the loss of Morgan Tsvangirai, the leader of the main opposition party, who died after a long battle with cancer of the colon. Reporter Kuzaiza Nwash speaks to some Zimbabweans to understand what this means for the nation.
The noise in the background is from hundreds of people who have thronged the central business district to mourn Morgan Tsvangirai. Mostly wearing red, the party regalia, they have blockaded the street outside the Movement for Democratic Change offices. One mourner, David Chonzi, says Zimbabwe has been dealt a huge blow.
Basically, for the nation, it's a great loss. This shows that this man was a visionary and a person who had people at heart. The general populace. For the country's democracy, it still has a long way to go. It is not yet here, and it has left a void.
Chonzi says Tsvangirai's shoes will be hard to fill. He had long spoken against Zimbabwe's longtime leader, Robert Mugabe, when no one else would. Edgar Gweshe is a journalist who has covered MDC for decades.
He has got a well-known record of fighting for democracy in the country, and it's very sad that he had to die before he had accomplished his mission. But at the same time, I think it is a defining moment for the MDCT family and Zimbabweans at large, especially those pro-democracy groups. It is a time for them to unite and be able to fulfill the ambitions of their late Richard Morgan Tsvangirai.
During Tsvangirai's last days, while he was getting medical treatment in neighboring South Africa, his party endured factional battles over who will serve as acting president. Elias Mudzuri or Nelson Chamisa. Chamisa recently was appointed the acting president by the MDC National Council, which is the party's supreme board. He said the party is not in a crisis.
We are very much certain that we've lost our very crucial soldier at a very important and crucial moment. We are just 4 months away from an election and we've lost a commander. But what I can tell you is that we do not have a crisis of the generals on the field.
Chamisa says the party's only gift to Tsvangirai will be to join with other democratic forces and win the election. MDC's National Council met today to debate who will serve as acting president. Something critics have said is un-African to deliberate on who takes over so soon after the news of Tsvangirai's passing. Chamisa, however, says it is important to decide.
There is never an opportune moment to deal with the crisis. We are in a crisis. There must be leadership in the cockpit, and there has to be an acting president.
Chamisa says the Tsvangirai family will guide the MDC on burial arrangements. Condolence messages have been pouring in. Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa was one of the first to send condolences and instructed the Zimbabwe Embassy in South Africa to assist the Tsvangirai family in any way appropriate. it is uncertain what lies ahead for the party's future, as the other two vice presidents, Mudzuri and Thokozani Khuphe, were not at the party offices when the National Council made the decision that Chamisa would be the acting head for the party. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinamashe from Harare.
20 past the hour, you were listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Egyptian authorities today referred a former presidential candidate to prosecutors. They allege Abdel Mensen Abdul Fitu has been in contact with the banned Muslim Brotherhood. Police detained him and several associates late yesterday. The associates were freed, but Fitu remains in custody. Fitu was a member of the Muslim Brotherhood, but quit to run for president in 2011 against the organization's candidate, Mohamed Morsi. He is the latest in a string of Egyptian political figures who have been detained in recent months ahead of the presidential election in March. Several candidates have been arrested, and government critics say others were pressured to drop out of the race. President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi faces only one other candidate, a man who previously had endorsed him. Kenya's High Court has declared the recent deportation of a prominent opposition politician illegal. The ruling is expected to further heighten tensions between the government's executive branch and the judiciary. Mohamed Yusuf has the story from Nairobi.
It was evident that the second and third respondents illegally held the applicant in custody on 2nd February.
Delivering his ruling Thursday, Kenyan High Court Justice Luka Kimaru termed the deportation of a prominent lawyer and opposition politician, Miguna Miguna, illegal. The judge ordered authorities to present Miguna's Kenyan passport in court within 7 days. The Interior Minister quickly hit back with a statement, saying it will appeal Thursday's ruling. The Interior Minister rescinded Miguna's Kenyan citizenship last week and alleges that he acquired his passport illegally. Miguna was deported after he was charged with treason over his role in opposition leader Raila Odinga's self-inauguration as a so-called People's President on January 30th. A court has ordered Miguna's release on bail, but the government failed to comply and instead sent Miguna to Canada, where he's also a citizen. Earlier this month, authorities defied another court order to immediately lift the suspension of 4 private media outlets. The Interior Minister had said the outlets were under investigation for allegedly conspiring to subvert the government and spark violence. The broadcasters had planned live coverage of Odinga's self-inauguration. Lawyers marching Thursday in the capital said the government must respect the rule of law. Ochieng Gore is one of the lawyers who came for the march.
The government must be true to what we say in the Constitution. It is not optional for people to obey what laws they want to obey and which ones not to obey. If we go that way, then we are going to have anarchy in this country. It is the rule of law that keeps us together as a country.
Tension has been brewing between the government and the judiciary for months. President Uhuru Kenyatta called the judges thugs at a campaign rally last year after the Supreme Court threw out Kenyatta's August election victory and forced the Electoral Commission to conduct a new poll. Kenya's Chief Justice issued a rare statement last week warning that the government's recent defiance of court orders could threaten the rule of law. This week, the ruling Jubilee Party replied with a 3-page open letter to the Chief Justice accusing the judiciary of bias in favour of the opposition. Constitutional law expert Danstan Omari says Kenya is still adjusting to the changes in the new constitution enacted in 2010.
This is a hangover from 1964. Until 2010. So the Jubilee regime wants to go back to that era where the judiciary could take directions from the executive. But the type of the freedom Kenyans have seen, the type of Bill of Rights that the Constitution provides, that cannot happen.
Lawyers in Kenya have been wearing yellow ribbons as a form of protest. The country's largest lawyers' association has threatened that its members will boycott court sessions if the government continues to disobey court orders. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Uganda's government has promised to take stern action against officials found guilty of stealing funds meant for refugees. Uganda's Minister for Refugees says investigations have already begun into allegations of widespread theft of donated aid to help refugees, and President Yoweri Museveni vows to jail those found guilty. VOA's Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
With more than a million refugees sheltered within its borders, and more likely to come, Uganda needs to reassure international aid donors that their funds are safe. Hilary Onek is Uganda's Minister for Refugees and Disaster Preparedness.
We want to assure the country and our partners that no stone will be left unturned. We have zero tolerance on corruption and abuse of public funds. We are taking the necessary steps to ensure that the investigations are carried independently and professionally. We have Uganda police together with the international inspectorates from the World Food Program and the United Nations who are also carrying parallel independent investigation on the matter. Whoever will be found to have been involved will be firmly dealt with.
The United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, Filippo Grandi, made the allegations of stolen funds a priority on his recent visit to Uganda. Uganda officials are alleged to have inflated refugee numbers, misused food and cash aid for refugees, accepted bribes, and trafficked in young girls. The UN calls for a speedy investigation, and some major donors such as the European Union and the United States have threatened to withdraw support if the Ugandan government does not take action. Onek says among the measures implemented to prevent theft are new biometric enrollment systems for refugees.
We are going to perfect the information system, and this time receiving food you have to use your biometric, your finger. The mistake which was happening before was that they were not considering using the biometric. Although all refugees are registered, that's what should have been the system. But somehow there was laxity.
President Yoweri Museveni says all officials convicted in the refugee scam should be sent to prison.
The ones who are stealing refugee money will go to jail. That is simple, because the prisons are there waiting for some occupants from the Prime Minister's office who steal refugee food. They bring shame to Uganda, because to steal what is meant for refugees, for desperate people, God will also come in. So these thieves, they will pay.
Onek notes that despite the allegations, Uganda will continue its open-door policy for refugees.
Uganda remains committed to upholding its progressive refugee policy that provides refuge to our brothers and sisters who are fleeing dangers in their country. Our stance is premised on our history and the realization that no one chooses to be a refugee.
Donor states are watching to see what comes next. Albrecht Konze is the German ambassador to Uganda.
Once Uganda can say, now we are clean again, trust can be maintained. If it takes too long, I cannot guarantee continuation of donors' readiness to support Uganda in this difficult endeavor.
Uganda hosts over 1.4 million refugees, mainly from South Sudan, Democratic Republic of Congo, Burundi, Somalia, Rwanda, Eritrea, Sudan, and Ethiopia. They are given relief items including plots of land for settlement, food rations, and clothing. Most of the relief aid comes from international donors, with the European Union and US government among the major donors. In June last year, Uganda hosted a refugee summit with a target of raising $2 billion for refugee funding. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
Sports fans, this is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.